This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. Go to FUBARradio.com for more details.
Back Row and Chill with Johanna James on FUBAR Radio.
Good afternoon. Welcome. It's Back Row and Chill. I'm here with...
Alexa Wall.
You're back, babe. Woo, woo. It's Friday afternoon. Pretty much the weekend started, let's just say.
And it's a bank holiday weekend as well.
Again?
4 day. Well, I think a lot of people have taken today off, you know.
Sneaky.
Four-day weekend.
And it's going to be bank holiday, like, next weekend as well or
is
something.
Is it? No. Oh, yeah, it's May.
It's
weird
May,
one.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Or at the end of May. I don't know. We're just full of bank holidays right now, which I'm not saying no to. So that's great. Right, we've got a really packed show for you today. We've got loads of guests. We've got our resident film reviewer, Lucy Patterson, coming in at 5:30 to tell you what is hot and what is not. And we've got loads of entertainment news coming up, so stay chilled. Noel is away this week, so Alexa is... I'm filling in. I was going to say filling his seat.
Oh, please don't. Please do not even try with that. Because it's just going to come out as some form of euphemism, isn't it?
I know. I've got stuck already. I was like, she's filling up his boots with something.
No.
And musically today, if you are a fan of 80s cinema, then you might be in for a treat because loads of the songs I'm doing today are classics from that era. We've had loads of requests over the last couple of weeks to get some more 80s tracks in. So I have listened and I am doing it. If you would like to get in contact with the show, then just email in chill@fubarradio.com or tweet in @fubarradio and get involved. Tell us what you're watching and what you're enjoying because... word of mouth is the best one, really.
Pretty much, yeah.
It's the best one.
And social media.
Social media. Tweet us, beep us, whatever. Yeah. Whatever.
Slap us around the face.
Whatever. Right, pack show coming up. So I'm going to dive right in there, and I'm going to go with a bit of Blondie.
Which my homegirl.
Exactly. She's pretty much your, like...
She's my girl.
She's your, like, vintage twin.
She is, yeah. Well,
spirit
I hope.
Animal. Spirit animal. Yeah, we're going to go for Blondie, Call Me. It's about growing chill.
Yeah.
That's my Blondie impersonation.
Brilliant.
For you.
That was fab.
If you've just joined us, it's Johanna James and Alexa Wool, and we're running back row and chill today.
Woo!
Yeah. I think we should just get straight in there before our guests come on and talk a little bit about entertainment news, what is going on in the world of film and whatnot.
Go for it.
Because there's not a lot of films coming out right now, apart from Guardians of the Galaxy. Probably the main one in the cinema yet. Haven't seen it. Going to see it. When am I going to see it?
I'm not sure.
Monday. I'm taking bank holiday and I'm going to go see what's out. And that was the one that popped up.
Hmm.
But, right. So in the news, Johnny Depp, because you're a Disneyland fan.
I mean, of course.
Yeah. So Disneyland. Johnny Depp surprised Disneyland
I heard about
people.
This.
He popped up in the Pirates of the Caribbean ride at
that
Disneyland.
That would have scared the absolute shit out of me. Because I think that ride is scary anyway. Like, I'm not a massive fan of mannequins, and you're going through and these really weird mannequins moving and all this. Imagine if one just moved a bit too much. Like, no. Oh, no.
Well, but then once you register that it's Johnny Depp, you're like, okay, jump in my boat.
No, that's and I'd be fine. Like, why is he here? What? It's just a very weird scenario.
Well, I think it's to do with his obviously in massive financial problems, and I think Disney have gone, we'll chuck you a lot of money, mate, if you appear in our ride. So I think that's why he's dressing up forever. It's always going to pay the bills, Jack Sparrow.
Well, yeah, it is actually.
Always.
They're doing another film though, and I'm like, can you just not?
But this film, for any like true pirate fans, it's got Johnny Depp, obviously he's in all of them, but it's got Orlando Bloom and Keira Knightley coming back.
Hang on, they're coming back for it?
From the original.
No.
Yeah, and the whole story is about their son.
Oh my God, I did not know that.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll watch it now.
I know, it looks really epic.
Thanks for informing me.
Go check it out on YouTube, the trailer for the new Pirates of the Caribbean, because it looks so good. So yeah, that was Johnny Depp in Disneyland.
Yep.
And
weird.
Ridley Scott has announced, well, not announced, but he has gone on the record to say that he thinks that aliens are out there.
Right, okay.
Which makes sense.
It's not new news, really, is it? I mean, people have been wondering about this for thousands of years.
And yeah, it's not news that that aliens are out there, but Ridley Scott, I mean, I think we get the message. He's made so many alien films now, alien-inspired films, and he's got a new film, Alien Covenant, which is about to be dropped, and he's gone on the record saying he's spoken to people at NASA, and it's like a lot of people's opinion at NASA that if you look at the data, it's just almost like mathematically impossible that we're alone.
Yeah, it's like, well done, mate. We all already think that anyway.
Yeah. So, you know, bit of alien. Did you see that film recently? Mm. I'm going to try and say his name. I can never say it.
Oh, Jesus.
M.N. Shyamalan.
Who the bloody hell is that?
He's the director that did, like,
Shyamalan.
Sixth Sense, The Village, Unbreakable, Split.
Unbreakable?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that the one that Angelina Jolie did?
No, Unbreakable is with... Bruce Willis, there we go. Bruce Willis.
I don't know any of these films that you've just mentioned.
Okay, well.
Sorry, so no, I do not know. Please fill me in.
It's M. Night Shyamalan. Somebody tell me how to say his bloody name. He's a brilliant director and I do like his films. They're always quite dark with a massive twist at the end, like The Sixth Sense. Like, I see dead people.
I've never seen it.
Oh my God, you totally should, but I've just ruined the ending for you. Okay.
Thanks for that.
But so he said that the film Unbreakable, which had Bruce Willis in, and his most recent one, Split, which was James McAvoy, with loads of personalities.
Oh, yeah. I actually really liked that film.
Okay, well, then you have seen one of his films.
Yeah, sorry. That didn't register with me.
So his next film, he said, is going to be a sequel to both of those films. So he said, what people don't realise is that...
Oh, of course. Jesus Christ. I've caught up with you now. Carry on. Yeah.
So
yeah, I'm with you.
Split and Unbreakable.
Because of what happens at the end of the Split film.
Exactly. It's the same
universe. That's why I didn't understand the ending.
So it's all
Christ. Connected.
And it's going to be like a trilogy. So he's like sneakily made a trilogy.
I get it now.
It's just like, I'm going to put one out there, one out there, and then bam, here's the next one, bitches.
Yeah.
So it's...
Makes sense.
Yeah, very clever, but a bit sneaky. That's a bit...
It's quite cool, that, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think more people should make like random films and then tie them together.
I mean, it would help maybe if he'd have thrown a bit of a hint so I could have watched Unbreakable before I saw Split and then maybe I would have understood it.
Yeah, he's just assuming that you've already seen his like backlog of work.
It's a little bit sort of self-righteous, isn't it, really?
I mean, what would you think would be the most random films that would be announced that they're actually linked?
Sleeping Beauty and Shrek. That was the first thing that came to my head.
Okay, I'm thinking more like Pretty Woman and Alien. That would be a weird.
Okay, yeah, maybe.
Universe.
Let me try and think of another one. Jurassic Park and
maybe like Twilight.
Skins.
Oh,
that'd be quite good.
Twilight with it.
Could you imagine? Like, you're having a rave, you're having a party, you've had a few, let's say, beverages.
Yeah.
You know, blah, blah, blah. All of a sudden, you're like, let's go outside and have a barbecue. Dragons?
Dinosaurs!
Dinosaurs is what I meant. Dragons.
We can add dragons in there as well.
I think that'd be quite good. Jurassic Park 4.
If anyone out there has any like film ideas that'd be really weird to mash together and make a sequel of.
Yeah, please let us know. I'm quite intrigued
what
now.
What would be like the two most random, funniest films? Tweet us at FUBAR Radio or email in chill@fubarradio.com. Okie dokie. So Brad Pitt and David Fincher, who's the director of Gone Girl. They are going to join up together and they're going to be doing the zombie film, the Zombie Z sequel.
World War Z,
there we go.
Doesn't sound good in a British accent, does it? World War Z.
Yeah, it's going to be World War Z.
World War Z. Yeah, carry on. I've got a bit of flu brain. I don't really know what's going on right now.
Well, I just called it Zombie 2, so I don't know. Whatever. But they're going to be making the sequel and everyone's getting quite excited that David
Fincher...
I quite
liked the first one.
Do you know what I did? I saw it in the cinema and I thought... And I watched it recently. I think it's on Netflix now.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
And I was like, this is not bad for like a Friday night. Just, you know.
It's all right, isn't it?
Having some snacks. It's great. Yeah, good film.
So they're making another one.
But did you know, a little factoid about that, that they filmed this entire epic ending to World War Z.
Right.
Which was in Moscow. It's going to be in the Red Square in Russia. And they filmed it and they finished the movie and it cost quite a lot of money. And then they did preview screenings and everyone went, brilliant film, shit ending. So they said, a few months later, they went, sorry, well, Brad was the producer. So Brad probably said, sorry, guys, we've all got to come back and we've got to reshoot the end.
No.
Which is why the film is like super high budget until the last 20 minutes. And then it just goes into like six actors in a science centre in Wales because they had no money. So it goes from like super big budget and it ends on like a shoestring. And that was because it was on a shoestring and it was a reshoot. So
God, I did not know that.
I wish they would release the film with the original ending option on the DVD.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Maybe they have, correct me if I'm wrong. But I really want to see the big Russian fight version. But isn't that weird how...
It's a bit weird.
The entire ending of a movie just rewritten and reshot.
It's, you know, it's quite a good thing that it worked because then you've got another one like Suicide Squad that just failed epically. Because the editing of that was horrendous.
Whoever edited that, go home.
It's just
shame.
They obviously had to reshoot half the film.
Oh, they did, didn't they?
Yeah.
And they cut,
and
like,
they just
half
didn't
the
do it. Yeah, they just didn't do it right at all. So World War Z actually worked out quite well, but the... Anyway, yeah. I went on a tangent there.
They saved it. Right, we've got more entertainment news coming up next. I'm just going to pop along to our next 80s.
What is it?
Oh, I don't know. Like, there's so many amazing 80s tunes. I'm going to be just, dancing
I'm excited.
The studio. I'm going to go and look a bit of Footloose. Got to have a bit of Footloose.
Yes!
This is Kelly Loggins from,
good
obviously,
choice.
The film Footloose. Better and chill.
Johanna James and Noel Clark on FUBAR Radio.
You are listening to FUBAR Radio. It's Back Row and Chill. Film review, entertainment show thing.
Words of wisdom from Alexa Wall.
As well.
Just throwing it on the side. Agony aunt.
Well, we're talking all things entertainment newsy right now. So we were just talking about Brad Pitt, like, teaming up with David Fincher. Mm-hmm. I was going to say tag teaming, but that's not really quite...
Oh, dear.
No. Not that kind of movie. To make the...
Oh, dear.
I keep calling it Zombie 2. That's what I've written it down
World
as.
World War Z 2
sequel. So that's going to be quite cool. Mm. Are you a fan of zombie films?
Sure.
Do you know what? The thing I liked about World War Z was the fact that the zombies were so epically fast that it really did, like, made you shit yourself. Because normally zombies, you think, oh, it's fine. They only walk, they only crawl. Like,
oh, yeah, that's true.
And you're like, I can get away from them. That's fine. I can outrun them, you know, for
no,
sure.
No.
And then World War Z came along and went, no, I'm dead. So I'm excited for that. But it's going to be a while in the making because they're not starting filming until next year, which is a bit annoying.
Ooh.
They've announced the final Star Wars movie of the trilogy.
Oh, for God's sake,
you're not
man.
A Star Wars fan?
I hate it.
Have you seen it?
No.
That's why you don't like it.
It's so annoying.
I challenge you. I'm going to dare you to watch the brand new Star Wars.
I don't
want
to see it.
It's so good.
I don't care.
You stubborn little shit. You would like it. But the next one's called The Last Jedi. And then the final movie,
I am your father. That's what happens really, isn't it?
In the original
movies. In a nutshell. Sorry, carry on.
And this one's great. It's all about, like, a girl gets to be like the last Jedi. Well, maybe the last Jedi ever. It's all kick-ass and cool, and she's very cool.
Do you know what I heard?
What?
Harry Styles auditioned for the young Han Solo role.
I did hear that, and he didn't get it.
Nope.
It went to, forgot his name, but someone else who does look quite good.
Yeah, who is it?
We need to Google that.
Yeah,
we're
going
to find out who is the new Han Solo, but it was not Harry Styles.
It's not, unfortunately.
I don't think that...
I would have seen it if it was him.
For sure, but I think Harry Styles, because he's such a popular pop star, you're never going to be able to see him as anything but that. You're going to keep expecting him.
You would have thought that about Emma Watson, because she's Hermione through and through, but now she's Belle. I don't know how she got away
but
with
you,
that.
But you know, he'd be like Han Solo going through the Star Wars galaxy, and then you'd just be expecting him to go, "That's what make you beautiful." And I just wouldn't buy into it. So, no. But
that was brilliant.
For anyone who is the Star Wars fan out there, the last film has been announced, and its release date is going to be the 24th of May, 2019. So make sure you put that in your diary, because it's literally over 2 years away.
Thank God for that.
But bloody hell, you know, they're going to be Star Wars fans that's going
to
be like,
I tell you what, I went to Disneyland about 2 days ago. Half of Disneyland now is about Star Wars, and I'm very annoyed by it.
Because it's Disney.
Yeah, it wasn't. I was like, why could they not have bought the rights to, like, Anastasia, you know? But they bought Star Wars instead.
Well, I am a huge fan, so it's good. It's good we've got opposing views.
Yeah, it is.
Because we can represent.
I can't stand it.
What do you guys think of Star Wars? Is it a yay or a nay?
Well,
tweet
I'm gonna
us.
Get a lot of hate now, aren't I?
Tweet us at FUBAR Radio. Who's right? Is it me or Alexa?
Me.
Team Alexa or Team Johanna? Let us know. Okay, more Disney. So obviously they're doing live action Lion King.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, they're making live action everything, but...
A live action Lion King?
The next one is going to be live action Lion King.
Okay.
And Seth Rogen is rumoured to now be playing Pumbaa. Which I think fits. I think he's a good...
That does fit.
I think he's a good Pumbaa.
I don't know how I feel about live action Lion King, though.
I don't know how they're going to do it.
Well, they can't really use lions. Is that going to have to be CGI?
Yeah, I think it's going to be like a Jungle Book scenario.
Yeah.
They're going to be doing Lion King, but it must be.
Yeah. I thought I'd be more excited about that, but I'm not.
I don't know how they're going to go. But, you know, I do love, you know, I love all that.
I mean, Seth Rogen will be quite good.
And Seth Rogen will be amazing. Yeah. So that is the latest news hot off the press for the casting of The Lion King. And Frozen, if anyone's a Frozen fan, I know that a lot of mums out there are like, thank the Lord, that like 2 hours a day that my child just doesn't like touch me. Frozen sequel is going to be coming out. But again, not until the 27th of November, 2019, which is like, two and a half years away.
That's quite a long time for a sequel for Frozen.
I mean, I know.
I thought they'd already started making it.
I thought they'd be on that shit.
Yeah.
Because that is like billions and billions of dollars.
I mean, I don't want them to rush it by any means, because It's not my favourite Disney film in the world, but, you know.
Like, don't take, you know, don't rush it, but don't take that much time.
Yeah, it's a bit too long, that.
Because all the kids who like the original Frozen are going to have their own kids, and they'll be like, well, you know.
Well, I mean, it is only 2 years.
Well, at the rate that young people get pregnant nowadays, you never know. Right, so up next, we've got our first guest in the studio. It's Michael Yale and David Leopold, and they're going to be talking to us about our new play, Late Company, at the Finsbury Theatre, so it's all very exciting. I love a bit of theatre. Right, so today, if you've just joined us, we are playing all things kind of 80s soundtrack. We're going to go back to the like 80s vibe. So I'm going to go for Rhythm of the Night by DeBarge now, which actually featured not only...
He's in the rhythm of the night. Is that what you meant?
No, wrong song.
Oh.
You're going to listen to this and be like, what?
Jesus.
This is the original Rhythm of the Night, but it did feature in the latest Ghostbusters movie last year. It's a boogie. Get ready. We're going to be doing like our lunges, getting ready for the Friday night dancing, because I'm going out tonight, so I'm going to go lunge.
Me too. Woo!
Let's go and lunge in the studio. You guys at home.
Wine!
We're going to speak to our guests soon.
When it feels like the world is on your shoulders and all of the madness has got you going crazy, it's time to get out, step out into the street where all of the action is right there at your feet. Well, I know a place where we can dance the whole night away underneath the electric stars. Just come with me and we can shake your blues right away. You'll be doing fine once the music starts. Celebration starting under the street lights. The scene is being set. A night for romance, a night you won't forget. So come join the fun. This ain't no time to be staying on. Ooh, there's too much going on.
Listening to Back Row and Chill. It is Friday, it's the 28th, right?
I have no idea.
I have no idea. I did just realise I went off the computer, but I don't trust computers that much. I should really know this. Anyway, we've joined in the studio by our first guest, so welcome, welcome, welcome.
Hello. Hi, hello.
Hello. It sounds like there's more of us. There's just two. A legion of people have just come in. It's Jonathan, no, not Jonathan, Michael Yale and David Lieber. Do you know why? The producer was like, do not call them Jonathan. So Freudian slipped that in.
Well done.
What a mess. Right, anyway, welcome, guys. Do you want to introduce yourselves and sort of what we're here to talk about today?
Yeah, well, I'm Michael Yale and I'm directing Late Company, which is a play at the Finborough, and we open this week.
I'm David Leopold and I'm an actor in the show.
It's like so shy. And I'm an actor. Like, you could be like, and I'm an actor.
No, I think there are too many of us doing it like that.
I like it. It's like, it's very humble. It's good. So the play, immediately I read this sort of synopsis about it. If you want to, you're probably going to word it better than me, so if you want to say it, tell everyone at home what the play is about.
I try not to give too much away, but I think you have to really say what it's about. And it's about a couple whose son has taken his own life, and it's a year later, and they want to move on and put their ghosts to rest. And so they arrange a reconciliation meeting, which is takes part over a dinner party, with the parents of the lad who they think was the lead bully. So everybody comes forward to have a reconciliation dinner party.
It kind of sounds like, I could be very wrong here, it sounds like a cross between 13 Reasons Why and in Inspector Calls.
That's a good
show. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, immediately when I read it, I went, oh, I'm watching 13 Reasons Why. And that is like, everyone's talking about it for good reasons and bad.
It's very on point.
It's very on point. So this play is very current.
It's the European premiere, so it was written a few years ago and it's Canadian, so we're giving it its European premiere.
Mm. Okay. Oh, so is it set in Canada or have you relocated?
Yeah, Ontario.
Oh, yeah. I used to live in Ontario.
Did you?
Yeah, when I was really little.
Oh. I did not know that.
Yeah, that's fine. All my like old VHSs is me like, Mommy! Yeah, but I do like
You'd
Canada.
Have to listen to his accent and tell us.
Oh, what's your Canadian accent like?
We have to come and see it.
Oh, that was a good one.
So, who do you play?
I play the a classmate of the boy who took his life, who is accused of being his main bully, tormentor. So he comes over, you know, to the house with his parents.
And it's all in real time. They eat dinner, and you're
lovely.
Right,
so you're literally just like a fly on the wall at this dinner party.
Ooh,
this intense drama.
Yeah.
I'm getting feels. So this is good. And it is so current because I do think one of the great things about 13 Reasons Why is it's getting people talking about sort of bully culture and about how bullying has evolved. Like, I was talking to my friend the other day saying, I don't know if I would survive school nowadays with all of the messages.
It's
and
like
the
social media, isn't it?
The pressure of social media on such
technology.
Young people.
We had some people come see the show recently and they really understood what was going on, and they'd be bullied at school, and they said, the thing is now, you can't leave it at school because you go home and you're on social media and you're still getting bullied, so there's no hiding from it anymore.
For sure. It is like, I'm so glad that I almost grew up without that happening, and now it's just social media. Is you can look at it sort of through adult eyes, and it's a little bit more. You still get bullying even when you're an adult. I'm not saying it's just the kids. Like, people can be mean and troll people all over the place. But
it's particularly dangerous when you're younger. I think you tend to be more, you know, impulsive, and you're discovering things about, you know, how the world works, and the fact that you have the great thing and a bad thing as well about technology is that it allows easy access to so many things, but it allows that trigger finger. It's so easy, you know. So it's just that much more hard to control, I think.
Yeah, I saw a play at the Hampstead, I think a year or two years ago, and it was about not as serious, not as deep as a death, but it was about how social media, more like revenge porn, can really affect people. And it was about this boy, and at first you were on the boy's side, and then when you sort of, it was the two families and how this young couple and the revenge porn situation, and it going around the internet and going viral and all this sort of stuff, and by the end of it, sort of you realise that you were more on the girl's side than the boy's side. It was such a good switch, but it did make me think, I'm so glad that plays are, to the young people out there who maybe think that the theatre isn't for them or it's not relevant, like, there is drama, there's stories that is just about your life.
Well, we had the second night, we had 20 young people, not quite sure what country they're from. They had English as a second language, and they were, you know, took over one bar of seating and they didn't move. They were just completely hooked.
It was really cool.
And then behind them, they had women of a certain age who were the mums who, again, you know, they're really bought into it and were completely mesmerised.
Yeah, as much as it's about bullying, I think it's also about parenting and like how well do you know your kids and you know, so I think
what they get up to,
yeah, exactly, and like how do you monitor that, you know, how you know, how do you deal with that? It's a difficult question.
It's such a hard one because like my mum, she types with one finger and doesn't know how to open like basic, like her phone rings and she'll ask a stranger, excuse me, can you help me out? Like which button? So it is quite hard for anybody who is growing up. I'm trying to think of, and technology is only going to speed up and it's only going to be more, and now there's like how many platforms that young people can be on as well. So before, when we were growing up, what, there was like a MySpace and Facebook.
Bebo.
Facebook was new.
Bebo. I remember
there wasn't that many. And then now,
loved that. Just thought I'd lighten the mood a bit there.
Bebo! If anyone's
bring
still on
back
Bebo,
Bebo.
Yeah, tweet us at Fubar Radio. Is it gone? Is it totally dead?
No, it's come back. I think they've tried to launch it again as like some site, but nobody knows why, and it's failed.
Still on. I don't know if they've deactivated. Same with MySpace.
I don't think
I might still have my MySpace.
I still have my MySpace.
Yeah.
Floating around there with like emo photos and everything.
Bad times.
We'll just leave that back in 2003. But anyway, back, if anyone's just listening now, like, what are they talking about? We're talking about the new play called Late Company. And where is it? Where is it being shown?
It's at the Finborough, Theatre in
Earl's Court.
It is Earl's Court, but it's just kind of further down.
Because I hadn't heard of that Finborough. I was where's Finborough in England?
It's not far from Earl's Court.
Oh, it's in London. Okay, brilliant.
Yeah, between Earl's Court and West Brompton Station.
And how long's the run for?
A month.
A whole month, okay. Yeah. Okay. Which is, seems a long time, but it's actually quite short. So if you want to get your tickets, where would they go to get tickets? On the
The Finborough Theatre website. Yeah, they're online, but they are selling out really fast.
Well, I'm sure. It's such an awesome...
Very fast, actually.
Yeah. And just as the backstory, I love the stories of how plays and films come to be made and come to be on the stage. So how did you find it or come across it and think, yeah, I want to do this?
I've been working with a producer called Eileen Davidson, and we were looking for a project last summer. We'd just done a project and just read dozens and dozens and dozens of plays. And I'd worked on Canadian drama before, so I was looking at new Canadian theatre and new Canadian writers. Came across this guy called Jordan Tannehill, Red Lake Company. Game over.
Boom. Yeah. That's it. It's for me.
I have to have it.
Yeah.
So I'm just so pleased. It's on and I'm directing it.
And David, how did you get involved?
I was asked to audition, thankfully. Just got it through as per from my agent. And then I got the script on Friday and was just blown away. It was just one of the best scripts I'd read in such a long time and really exciting. Kind of thing to be involved in. And then I remember the auditions being, I had such a good time, and I could just tell that it was going to be handled in a good way, and then I got a call saying, yeah, we want you on board. And I was
Where were you when you got the call?
I was lying in my flat, in bed in my flat, and I got the call from my agent, and I literally did a little dance. I haven't told you this. I was in bed and then I jumped up and did like, I don't think I've ever acted like that. I did like a big dance.
There's no dancing in the show.
Backflip. You got it all out of your system.
Yeah.
I think, well, apparently I've spoken to a lot of fellow actors and they've said that the best part of a job is the moment that you get the job. Like that call. And then, it's interesting. And well, maybe they're saying that at the end of a long day of a shoot, like, this is exhausting. But it is that moment of saying that you got it, you won, and then it's like, yay, okay, now I actually have to do the job. Now I have to go on stage.
I was going to say, it probably wouldn't be mine because it's quickly followed by, you know,
the realisation,
you know. But I think I can totally see why, but it's followed very quickly by okay, get to work.
The cast are all really close as well. It's quite dark, but there's humour in it as well.
Okay, and, yeah, good. Well, yeah, you have to.
And as a as an ensemble, because it is an ensemble piece, they've all just gelled and they protect each other, because it's quite dark in parts, but have a laugh.
And how have you gone public yet, or have you
so you've got, we had 2 days of previews, and it's only our fourth day. 2 days of previews and a press night last night and a press night tonight.
Exciting.
And the reviews have just come out.
Don't read them. Well, you got to read them, but it's also like
read them. Some people don't like it because they feel like it can mess with their head a bit. But
that's good. Yeah, I think that's good.
Kick on your toes.
I think if you let other people's words affect you that bad, then maybe you shouldn't read them. But for me, I'm quite good.
It's brave. Yeah, brave.
You know,
they're good.
Okay, yeah, that also helps. Yeah,
which is brilliant. And I always just like to ask, because it's my favorite thing. When stuff goes wrong, or like backstage, have you guys had anything? How have you kind of? Has anything majorly gone wrong yet?
No, but yet. I always think some of the best moments on stage are when things go wrong, because then you have to collectively, as a cast, invest in still telling the story. And the audience don't know what story you're going to tell. So there's an incredible, I think, you know, I've had moments on stage when, like, you know, something goes wrong, or say someone in the audience drops something. And I think it's really important as the actor to, you've got to judge it, but sometimes if you are alive to that and then the audience see that, you take them in the same space. It's so exciting.
There's so many people are drinking all the way through the play. Looks like wine. And our stage manager has to make a cook a meal every night, because they have to sit down to dinner. There's going to be one night that something's going to go
Weird. Potentially. Yeah, because there's lots of like eating and things. So you know, sometimes you know, one of the actors was saying that he had like something stuck in his throat, and he's supposed to be saying some really important stuff.
Stuck in his throat.
So he's kind of like trying to keep going. He's like,
real food problems.
Yeah, food acting. Tricky. It's problematic.
And you should keep Rennies to hand.
Yeah. Emergency Heimlich's off stage.
Emergency aspirin.
Yeah. All right, brilliant. Yeah, and in sort of like your previous work, because a couple of times I've spoken to sort of actor friends, and they've said about these fantastic stories of when stuff goes wrong and they've had to try and cover it. Or like, especially in a Shakespeare, I was like, what do you do if something goes wrong in a Shakespeare? How do you cover that up? And someone said that you're supposed to turn to whoever is on stage, and so, and therein lies the end, and like walk off stage. And then you leave it with them.
I had, you know, because we're right by the Pleasance, and in my third year at Lambda we did Midsummer Night's Dream there for a graduating show. And I remember we had this school in, and a lot of them were on their phones and stuff during the show, and I was playing bottom, and there's a bit when he comes on with his ears and he's like, and everyone runs away from him, and they go, you know, and then he says like, why do they all run away? And this little girl in the front row on her phone, just she must have been like 12, she just didn't even look up, she just went, your face. And then I just, and I, but luckily the next line, and this is why Shakespeare's so brilliant, because I think in originally it's written for people to heckle.
To heckle,
shouts to fouls.
So you know, and the next thing he says is, no, this is all a trick. They're playing a trick on me. So I was able to just play it to her and keep going. But that was absolutely hilarious.
Oh,
so when
my
stuff
God.
Goes wrong, it can be.
Yeah,
wonderful.
it can go right, or you know, the stage can fall off. But you know, do it to their own. Well, thank you so much. If anyone's just joined us, we're going to recap again. We're talking about Late Company. A new play, isn't it? New Canadian?
It's new for Europe, so it's a few years old, and it won all sorts of awards in Canada. And we're giving it its European.
It's on in
launch.
London. So check it out in the, what was the theatre?
The Finbra.
I wanted to say Farnborough. No, don't go to Farnborough.
Don't go to Farnborough.
Go
we're
to
not
Finbra
there.
In Finbra London.
Elscourt.
Yeah.
Not that far.
West. It's only west. It's fine. Thank you so much for coming in, guys.
Thank you.
Now, we're going to go back to some more of our 80s classics. I think I'm going to do a bit of Bonnie Tyler now, just to go for it. Let's really go for
it. Tune.
Let's rank it up. You know what it's going to be?
Yeah.
Tom Maverick Hero.
I've spotted it.
James on FUBAR Radio.
Welcome back. This is Back Row and Chill with Johanna James and...
I was having a right kerfuffle. I'm Alexa. Hi. I sat on my shirt again and I was like, but I'm okay. Hi, everyone.
I'm glad there's cameras in the studio so we have all of this documented. Right. We've got our second guest in the studio. So a huge welcome. Yay. Jonathan Wakeham and Mercedes Grower. Damn it. I just like, I go with a name and I just try. And if not, sorry.
Hi, everyone.
Welcome.
Hello.
And you're here to talk about the Loco Film Festival.
Absolutely. Very pleased to be here.
Thank you. And that's like London's Comedy Film Festival, which I have to admit I hadn't heard of before. So I'm really interested about what it is and what's going on. So if you want to...
Yeah, absolutely. It's London. Well, it's Britain's only international comedy film festival. Mm. So we source the world for the most original and unexpected comedy films. And it's really a celebration of the craft of comedy filmmaking. Making comedy films is much harder than making normal films because
so
you have to do
so
the
hard.
Story, the characters, yeah. the plot, the twist, the surprises, and then... the jokes. So it's like doing 150% of the job. And yeah. yet, if you do it well, it looks really, really easy. Mm. So we felt it was really important to celebrate the craft of comedy, to recognise the talents who do it, because again, people who make comedy, they tend not to get the Oscar nominations. The Oscar nominations always go to the sad, the
That's
important,
so
the
true.
Tragic films. Whereas the ones who make you laugh, Bill Murray does not have an Oscar. What kind of world
I've
is this?
I've actually never thought about that.
Bill Murray doesn't have an Oscar.
Yeah, I know, that's actually outrageous. We should start a hashtag. He's hashtag Bill Murray for the Oscar.
Get Bill Murray an Oscar. Yeah. I mean, or a knighthood or a sainthood.
That would be great.
Either or all of the above will do. Thank you very much. I love that because I am a comedy actress as well. And I find that, it's very, very hard. And people also, they kind of expect you, be funny. Keep being funny. And it's like, actually, it's a craft. And sometimes you're not very funny. And sometimes you are. And I think it's really great that we're going to be celebrating this. Mm. So where can people go if they want to I'm down for some comedy? Where would they find this?
We will be at BFI South Bank. From the 4th to the 7th of May, so that's next Thursday to next Sunday, and it's four packed days of comedy films, training for young filmmakers. We've got silent films with live music. Ooh. We've got a first ever baby premiere, which is amazing. We will have babies on the red carpet.
No way!
At the London Comedy Film Festival.
That would be amazing. What are you wearing? What diaper are you wearing?
You're seeing the interviews as well.
So that's it's going to be, and it's the sixth year, so it's always a joy to be back at BFI South Bank. It is the most beautiful cinema in London.
It's gorgeous location.
I want to interview a baby. That'd be amazing.
Come along. They'll be wearing little bow ties.
That'd be brilliant. So if anyone was out there I make comedy films and I'd like to be involved in this, how do you find the films and select them? Is there, you have to submit them?
We have an open submission system. So between about June and October, we are open for people to send us their short films and features. Mm-hmm. We've always been championing new British talent. That's been right the way through. So we have three programmes of short films. We have a programme of online comedy. We have a thing called the Discovery Award every year, which is for a new independent British comedy. So that's about people. For us, the excitement is to be able to put people's low-budget, independent, homemade, homegrown, handmade films on the same big screen as Oscar-winning films, big-budget films, films with marketing budgets. So that's always been really important to us. And then we also now have a programme called the Betty and Peter Comedy Writing Programme. You should enter. It is great. So that is a programme where, thanks to the Cinema and Television Benevolent Fund, we are able to fund new and emerging writers from any background, anywhere in the country, whatever kind of person you are, with as little experience as you may have, you can send us your comedy ideas. And what we are able to do, thanks to this charity, is to give them £10,000 and a script editor to work with. Ooh. So it's really about just helping people to find their voice, giving people the time and the space to find their own unique voice in comedy. And that's also in partnership with Big Talk, which is an amazing, obviously, production company who made all of Edgar Wright's films and most of your favourite TV comedies as well. So that talent development thing is absolutely the heart of the
festival
for us. That's
amazing. Because I used to have this... So I've been doing comedy for about a year before I was like, no, I just want to be in Downton Abbey.
I'm a serious actress.
I'm a serious actor. And then someone sort of sat me down and went, actually, there's No offense, there's hundreds of you trying to do that, but there's not that many girls trying to be funny. So maybe you should like switch it up and go that way. And you're always like falling over stuff. So just, you know, be yourself and go down that route. So I did, but it was really hard at first to actually be brave enough to put down my ideas onto paper or onto like, you know, computer nowadays, and actually be brave enough to write that down. And so that sounds something I'm just feeling like there might be a couple of people out there who goes, well, I feel like I could write something funny, or I've got some stuff, I've written some stuff, but I don't know where to take it, where to put it. So this sounds really up my
street.
Please
come to us. I mean, all of, well, we had four, we were able to give money and support to four people this year. All of them were women.
Oh, fantastic.
And
fantastic.
Because I think women, you know, women have to have something interesting to say, right? Sure. Men do pub banter. Women tend to write comedy that's about something.
That's very true.
You know, it's about what they're interested in. It's about what they're learning. It's about what they're reading.
Yeah.
There's real content. If you, I mean, again, if you look at stand-up, if you think about people like Sarah Pascoe, JC Long, Izzy City, you know, people, they're writing and performing work that's about really important, interesting things.
Yeah. Well, I was like, I'm thinking, so I, if anyone doesn't know, listeners here, I think it's really ironic. I'm a radio show host and I am registered partially deaf. I'm hard of hearing.
Wow.
And I find, and I wear it and everything, and but the sort of the awkward moments that come up in my life because of wearing a hearing aid and because of being partially deaf is actually hilarious. And every time I tell people the story, they're like, you need to like write that down, or you need to put it on something. So I think that's where I'm going to start. I'm going to start with my deafness.
Please do. I think
and I'm going to make something funny out of it.
But it's a really good point. And I think we always talk about comedy being a safe place for dangerous ideas. Mm-hmm. And I think what comedy can do is it overcomes people's awkwardness. Comedy is a way of, I mean, it's how we can talk about things that are difficult or awkward or embarrassing, or things that people might be afraid to ask you directly.
Mm-hmm.
By talking about it in comedy, it says, we're all welcome, right? We're all flawed. We all make mistakes. We all get embarrassed. Comedy is a safe space when we can admit all of the things that we're afraid of and we can talk about them openly. And I think that's the magic of comedy.
Yeah.
You know, if you think about comedy
it's
films,
universal.
That's the thing. Because the heroes of comedy films, they tend not to be, you know, they're not superheroes, they're not amazing detectives. They tend to be people who have messed up in their lives some way. And I think that's why comedy is this place where we can all secretly, you know, admit the things that, like, we've screwed up in our lives and we can talk about them openly and honestly in a shared safe space. And that's what I think is the magic of comedy.
So the Loco Festival, just in case anyone's joined us now, we're talking about the London Comedy Film Festival going on with the BFI from next week, from the 6th.
For the 4th to the 7th.
From the 4th to 7th.
Thursday, so the 4th to Sunday.
Around the 6th. That was the kind of right.
That's okay. Breaks is on the 6th. So.
That's the kind of right. And just sort of personally, do you have any sort of highlights of the festival that you personally would just be like, oh, definitely, I'd like, this is my most my favourite film? Or do you have anything that you'd like to particularly shout out?
Well, the very talented writer and director sitting next to me will tell you all about her film in a moment. I think, I mean, other highlights for me, I think the closing film of the festival this year, which I think, again, coming back to what you were saying about deafness, is a film called Every Brilliant Thing. It's adapted from a hit play that was played around the world. It's a show about a young man growing up with a mother who is suicidal. Again, very, very difficult subject to talk about. And yet, Duncan McMillan, the writer, and Johnny Donohoe, who's the co-writer and performer, have made a film that is so warm and so accepting and so beautiful and so tender that it creates this, again, a safe space to talk about something that's difficult and awkward. So I think, and it's a really, really special film, and they've really captured Johnny's performance, and Johnny and Duncan are coming to talk about it after the film. So that, absolutely right, so that's on the Sunday the 7th at 6 p.m. I think another highlight for me is a film called The Other Side of Hope, which, again, this is a difficult subject. It's a Finnish film. It's made by the great director Aki Kaurismäki. It's about a Finnish travelling salesman and his relationship with a young Syrian refugee. And so, again, this is a film about the Syrian refugee crisis. If that was made as a documentary, it would win many, many awards. And about eight people would go and see it.
Yeah.
If you make it as a comedy, as this beautiful, warm, compassionate film, I think it can find a really big audience. And again, it opens up a space for people to talk about this issue in a way that takes it out of the politics, takes out of left and right and the kind of structures of the things, and just to think about things on a very human level. So I think definitely those, but I'm sure the my friend next to me will have another pick of the festival to talk about.
I want to see both of those, and the Finns are really funny.
And so, Mercedes, your film.
Yes.
What's that about? You want to.
Well, Breaks is a. Yeah, it's so weird having these earphones on. Breaks is a weird film. It's a sort of upside down version of love, really, and breaking up with people. It's filmed. The breakups are first. It's about 9 couples who split up with each other around London, and you see their breakups.
Oh, wow.
First.
Oh, and then like rewind on the.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
So you sort of end on a high, but yeah. Then you sort of go.
And is that based on real breakups that happened? Because that would be interesting.
No, actually, because everyone keeps asking me that. They weren't, but then I was just saying, a friend of mine said, oh, maybe they're all you, but they're not all me at all.
Subconscious you.
Yeah, it's me stalking people. No, they weren't. I was just trying to find really sort of, I was just thinking about how many ways you can break up with somebody and different kind of, just lots of different types of people, and then sort of also weaving it into London as well, and as part of it.
Sounds fantastic. I mean, breaking up with people, yeah, again, it's one of those subjects where it's horrible, it's heartbreaking, it's like grief.
But it's funny.
But it can be hilarious.
Yeah, it can be really, really funny.
And there was a girl, I think, she was breaking up with her boyfriend, having a huge row with her boyfriend in the middle of the streets of London, and a casting director happened to see this and was like, amazing, can I give you you're perfect for this project. And I think she ended up being the girl in Hard Candy. Fish Tank.
Fish Tank, yeah. The girl in Fish Tank.
Oh, Andrew Arnold.
Yeah. They're having a huge row with her boyfriend.
Yeah.
And was like, you are perfect for my role.
Yeah. So now I just like pay people to have arguments with me around Soho. Just in case.
That's the thing. I think it's a really universal, like everyone's had a breakup. So it's they seem so individual when they happen. Like you're in this tiny bubble.
Yeah.
And it's universal. We all have them.
Yeah.
And also I feel like you're a bit out of time with the world. Like they're having that argument in the street.
Yeah.
Everything else doesn't exist.
That's very true, actually.
When you're having that
round, in your own little bubble,
you don't give a shit. I mean, you could say anything and be completely insane in front of someone. And, you know, and I like that because it's sort of, you're stepping outside of yourself without realising it.
Yeah, it's like a weird dance, isn't it, that we're doing. Everyone has the moves that they're going to be doing.
Like I love all those old-fashioned dances. You know, in the Can-Can, they have them, I can't remember what they're called, where they fight and dance at the same time.
Mm. Ooh, spicy. It's passionate, isn't it? It's passion.
Yeah, yeah, it's passion.
Brilliant. So what's the name of that film, if anyone wanted to go and...
Which one? My one?
Yeah, your film.
Oh, yeah, what is it? Breaks. But it's Breaks like the brakes of a car.
Oh, but also... Could also play on the braking.
Yeah, because it's also the whole idea that it's... you know, you get back on something goes wrong, but you try again. Like, you do keep going round on the merry-ground, so it is a bit of a stop-start on each relationship.
And get back up again. What's the thing? Plenty more fish in the sea and all that, what everyone says, which doesn't mean shit all when something happens. You're like, but I want that fish!
Yeah, exactly.
I want exactly that fish!
That fish was for me!
But, you know. Oh, that sounds absolutely amazing.
I think the other thing I would say, just because Mercedes is a very good director but quite modest about her talent, is that... Breaks is nominated for our Discovery Award alongside Mindhorn and Chubby Funny. And I think one of the reasons that her film really stood out is that she coaxes these very, very unexpected performances from some very familiar names. I mean, her cast list, I luckily have it written down, it's Julian Barrett and Noel Fielding. So both of the Mighty Boosh appearing in a film. Oh, I think probably for the... almost first time they've been in a film together in different relationships.
Yeah.
And Steve Oram and Paul McGann and Kerry Fox and Julia Davis and Peter White, who's currently in Hamlet at the Almeida doing amazing work, and Roland Gift and Seb Cardinal and Kate Hoddy. This is the most extraordinary cast. And I think what Mercedes has done is to really encourage these kind of big name actors to do something we haven't seen them do before.
Yeah.
Ooh,
and it's a really remarkable achievement.
I'd be interesting to see definitely Noel Fielding doing something outside the kind of
he's really
that was my impersonation of Noel Fielding. Well, he doesn't. He just kind of Noel Fielding. I just picture him laughing. Like,
he's ace.
I do love him, but
he's really brilliant in this. And actually, he's really funny as well. But he's actually he's acting quite serious as well as being funny in this. Yeah, he's quite psycho in it.
Surprise! <Yeah.
laughs> but not in a fluffy way. He's great in it.
Oh, amazing!
Well, I'm getting the feels about
that. Sounds fab. So when is that being screened? When can we come and watch it?
That is on Saturday, the 6th of May at 10 past 6 in NFT 1, which is the big screen at the BFI.
The big screen.
Well, that's in my mind. Directly before Breaks, actually, is one of the other Discovery films. It's a film called Chubby Funny, which is about two young actors struggling to make it in London, which I think is probably a familiar story to many of your audience, and probably half of us in this room at least. Which is another kind of first-time director, very low-budget film, very original film. Again, I think what's actually really striking in the 6 years we've run this festival is how supportive comedy performers and writers are of each other. So, I mean, Mercedes has this extraordinary cast in her film. Harry Michel's film, Chubby Funny, you know, he's got him and his mates because that's how you make your first film. Mm. But Alice Lowe is in it, Julian Ryan Tutt is in it, Anna Maxwell Martin is in it. So again, you've got these kind of big names really supporting new talent.
Mm.
And I think that's the lovely thing about comedy is, you know, is I think there's a real level of support and community between the kind of, you know, familiar faces and the new people coming in.
Definitely.
You should always put your hand down to help the next person up, always, because that's how anybody starts. It's just you get a little, you know, you meet someone, you get a little help. Oh, I should intro you to this person. So pass it on, people. Pass on the love and the support. That's brilliant. Well, thank you so much. That is the Loco London Comedy Film Festival, which is next week at the BFI South Bank. So get on there. It's locofilmfestival.com. So just type
exactly
that in.
That.
Book away. And I think it's payday this weekend, so there's no excuse not to buy a ticket for that. This is brilliant. Thank you so much, guys, for coming in.
Thanks.
Absolute pleasure. Really nice to meet you both.
Yeah, we are playing 80s tunes this week.
Please, can you play The Goonies?
Okay, all right. Cyndi Lauper for The Goonies, because Alexa has requested it. This is Back Row and Chill. First of all over London, I'm seeing your face.
Yep. It's fun bumping into me.
Have you had that experience?
I actually was on a train and I came into the station and I was like in line with my face and I just looked down and hid because I didn't want anybody to go, oh.
That would be like
so embarrassing. I tried to do the selfie, but then someone looked at me weirdly, so I ran. No, don't want to be taking a selfie with myself.
Okay. Who did that selfie with the dog's face? Someone did that.
With the filter.
They put filter. It's like they were a dog and you were a dog. A little puppy.
Probably one of my mates.
One of your mates. Yeah.
That's a good idea, actually, with the poster.
Yeah.
So I saw the poster and first I thought, oh, is it Shakespeare? You know, what is it? So just for our listeners, to quick synopsis of what this film is about.
Well, it's not Shakespeare.
No.
The reason it's called Lady Macbeth is because she acts a bit like the lady from the play Shakespeare, Lady Macbeth. The play Macbeth. Sorry, I'll start again.
Go again.
It's not Shakespeare. It is. It's called Lady Macbeth because Catherine is a bit like the character from the play that people know, Macbeth. But really, it's because she's a young woman. Well, you take over. She's a young woman who's trapped in a loveless marriage, right?
She's married into this household to a man who's twice her age, and she's told to never go out, to not see anyone. She's given nothing to do. And she basically starts getting a bit rebellious. And there you go.
I really like about this is it's a period drama, but it's a period, it's unlike sort of any period drama that I've seen. Mm-hmm. It's dark and passionate and I think some people don't give, I love period dramas, don't get me wrong. Yeah. I'm like Downton Abbey all the way. But this one is just another level. It's like, it's darker and more modern, but just set in the past. Mm-hmm. Super relatable. So just in terms of sort of how it came about, how did the seed start for this film?
It started with Alice Birch, who wrote the screenplay. She and I met for a cup of coffee, and then she gave me this book, Lady Macbeth and Matense, which is the book which we adapted the film from. And when I read it, I just thought this central character of Catherine was so compelling. I love this woman because she didn't run away. She didn't sort of shut up, but she fought back. And it was great to see somebody in the middle of the 19th century just be so violent and not accept what she was told to do. She was told, stay indoors, and she said no, and so she fought back. So once we got that, then we went to this to iFeatures, who run this scheme where you can apply for a small amount of money to make a feature film, and then we had to go through a series of rounds to get the money to do it, and that's where it started anyway.
And Florence, for your journey, did you audition?
Yeah, so I was actually on a boat to Isle of Wight, and then I got a call saying that I had an audition tomorrow for Lady Macbeth. And I was like, oh my God, I have a day to prepare for Shakespeare. So I like got back on a boat and went back to Oxford, and then I read the sires. I was like, this doesn't sound like normal Shakespeare, but okay. And did the audition, didn't think it went very well.
As always.
And it did, apparently. And then...
Evidently, yeah.
And then, yeah, and then it kind of just happened like that. We did chemistry reads and figured out who was Sebastian. Mm-hmm. And then went up to Durham for some rehearsals. So it was all pretty swift and perfectly timed, actually.
And how long did it take to make as a sort of behind the scenes, was it? From start to finish, shooting-wise?
Oh. The shoot, well, I guess it was 24 days to shoot it.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, it was not very long. Mm. In the same place, and then we had 2 weeks of rehearsals beforehand, and then we had about 14 weeks to edit it, and we've been making it for about 3 years in total with the writing of the script and everything. So.
Amazing. And just about the sort of period costume, mm-hmm. because that's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
So were you all corseted up? And
yeah, so the first fitting, I was like, oh, Mum, guess what? I'm going to be in a corset and all this stuff, which is, you know, everybody thinks that they want to get in that thing, and then you get in, you're like, oh, my back really hurts and everything hurts. And it does take a while to just get used to because you have to start thinking about how your breathing pattern changes, mm-hmm. how you're going to eat, because unfortunately, when you eat food, it uses the space you use to breathe. So you have to only eat specific foods and you have to sit in a specific way and you have to make sure that you do all the things that you needed to do, whether it was like exercise or wee, before you get in it, because, you know, it's just completely, it's different. You don't know until you're in it. And part of that rehearsal period was really interesting because we would do so many of these physical scenes where me and Cosmo would have to wrestle or fight or he'd have to pick me up. It would all change when I was in the outfit because, of course, I can't wrestle the way that I would have done if I wasn't in a corset. So that corset to me was actually probably the most interesting factor to the whole preparation of Catherine, because that basically sculpted her. It made me stand in a certain way, it made me sit in a certain way, it made me talk in a certain way, and I wouldn't have known that if I hadn't have been in it. So yeah.
And character-wise, it goes to some very dark place, very, very, probably the darkest place you could probably go. how did you, like, get out of that at the end of the day?
Gin. I did, actually. I went on Amazon and I ordered gin and tonic. all the difficult scenes were obviously all difficult to film, obvious reasons. If they weren't, then I would probably have to go somewhere and speak to special people. lots of those scenes, we had a lot of time to really tackle them, and we didn't just, you know, skip through them. They were all serious and they were all done.
Well, we shot in sequence as well, so we started sort of quite optimistic in the way that the film starts, and then by the end we were in those darker places, and by that point we were all quite tired, so actually it fed into it. It all got quite dark, and then we finished, and then there was such an amazing sense of achievement that we had a massive party. And actually that's where we could then just let go of all of it.
Yeah.
But we kept it, I would say, for that last, certainly that last week, where all the stuff really starts to spiral down and become quite dark.
That's always pretty helpful as well, because you're aware of where you need to go. You've covered the story, you know how far, at what point Catherine is already, and then you go, okay, well, I know how deep we need to go now, and everybody's on the same wavelength.
I love that. It's a little bit of like a homage to a Shakespeare, because you're doing like a play, you're filming it like a play. So yeah, you get to totally live and breathe all the way through. And just really quickly, what is up next for you guys? What's the next adventure?
Off you go.
I'm working on a screenplay with the writer Walter Mosley, of a book he wrote called The Man in My Basement, which is about a young guy in America who gets paid some money to keep another man in his basement. So you think this is dark? It's going to get. This is the warm up.
Stretching out, lunging for the next
yoga. And for me, I've just finished a wrestling film. So completely different to Catherine.
I'm super excited.
Yeah, no, it was so much fun. I had so much fun on that shoot, and it was exhausting and exhilarating, and I learned how to wrestle, so if anybody touches me in a club now, I just do like some sort of headlock takeover and it's sorted. Yeah, exactly. And I'm really excited for people to see that one as well, because... Yeah, cool.
Yeah, me and Noel are huge wrestling fans, and we go, and we actually know Paige.
Yeah, do you?
Great.
I've followed her like since she started.
Yeah.
When I heard there was a movie coming out, I was like, and you look quite like her as well.
Especially with the black hair. And yeah, it was a phase. I did the pale and the black hair, and now I'm slowly going back to Florence. But yeah, no, it was a really, really fun
amazing
shoot.
I think our time's up, but thank you so much.
Thank
guys.
You so much.
FUBAR Radio presents
Ian Boltzlaff. Find you some porn to watch and you can explain what's happening.
X-tube. What about Nipples 19? No, he's got a gimp mask on. I'm not really into that, I'll be honest. Oh, there's a bearded man who has an extremely large penis. It's a man in very tight red pants.
Yeah, and what's happening?
And a man in blue pants is putting his penis in his bum. Quite close up.
How about
five
this?
In pussy. That's impossible.
Let's see if it's impossible or not then.
Oh, God, she is putting a lot of fingers in there.
Yeah, five, I believe. There was a spoiler in the title.
Yeah, but I thought there was going to be penises.
Quality broadcasting, isn't it?
It's badly filmed.
Quality broadcasting. No, I mean us. I don't mean, the porn video.
Every Monday.
Ian Boltzlaff.
From 2 p.m.
FUBAR Radio.
You're listening to Back Row and Chill on FUBAR Radio. It's Johanna James and...
Alexa Wall. Hiya.
Filling in for Noel Clark today.
I don't know what that was. Hi.
How you going? We're joined by our last guests of the afternoon. So a huge welcome. Tanya Fear.
Hiya.
And Sholamu.
Hello.
Welcome. And you're here to talk about your new movie, A Moving Image.
Yes.
So for all the people at home who are like, oh, I haven't heard of that. What's that about? What's the film about?
Don't look at me.
You explain the film, Tanya. I've done most of the explaining.
I always give him the hard questions. Yeah. I just like, oh yeah, I really love the costumes. Okay, so it is about a stifled artist, actress, filmmaker called Nina, who returns home to Brixton after a long absence and realizes that it's not the place that she grew up in. So she begins to make a film about the changes, the gentrification of Brixton, and in the process is accused of being a gentrifier herself, so has to grapple with her own sort of complicity in the issue. Mm-hmm. So it's a film about making a film. It's a film within a film within a film.
It was a bit Inception-y in the sense of, like, you were making a film, but you were of making a film.
Yeah.
And then I was wondering in some of the scenes whether people realised that you were actually making a film of a film, or they thought you were making a film. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, I thought that.
Like, especially the scenes, the public scenes, when you're talking to people.
Yeah, I thought that. Like, did they know that it was you playing someone, or
did they think it was
Nina?
Yeah, they thought it was Nina.
Ooh, I wondered that. I was like, "Oh, this is deep."
Yeah, very deep.
This is brilliant. And well, I was really drawn to the movie because I used to live in Brixton, and I moved there 2012-ish, I think, maybe. And I lived there for like 3 years, and it was insane the change in Brixton that I saw in just those 3 years from when I first moved. And I lived on, weirdly, I lived in the two places that you mentioned in that road. I lived on the Guinness Estate in Summerleighton Avenue, and then I lived on Rushcroft Road.
No way.
So I was like, what, this is so weird. It's about me. But I genuinely, the two places they mentioned in the film, I'm like,
that is quite weird.
I lived in both of those, and weirdly I lived there, and I think I fell down the middle because I wasn't the original people who lived there, but I wasn't the new people either. So I was property guardianshipping. I don't know what you call that.
One of them living guardian type
people. I was living
people.
Guardian. So I moved to the Guinness estate after they were moving everybody out to stop people, squatters moving in, but it was before all the new flats were built. So I was living obviously in the old apartments, and the same then they moved me to Rushcroft Road after all the squatters had been removed. I lived in the old houses of Rushcroft Road before. And then I looked into, I said, oh, actually, we really, really love it. We love the area. We'd like to, when the new people said, oh, they're going to be made into new flats, we sort of inquired about how much it would be. And it was going to be like £2,000 a month. And we went, whoa, okay, no. We can't afford to live in Brixton. So I had to move out because I could not afford to live anywhere else in Brixton. Looked down the road at some other houses and sort of thought, maybe if we rally friends together, we can afford it. No, couldn't. Literally couldn't. Had to go out to Peckham. Couldn't afford Brixton anymore. So this film, I thought, was really good in raising that, and I can only imagine how hard it would be for people who have spent their entire life there, not just someone who turned up, you know, in their 20s and thought, oh, I really like this place, I want to stay. No, I can't. So how did the film sort of come about then?
So the inception of the film was through a conversation between myself and the producer Rinkia Ator, who was born and raised in Brixton but left, and then very much like Nina's character, found herself out of step with the place. I live in Elephant Castle in South London, and I had experienced regeneration in that space through what happened with Southwark Council and the Haygate Estate, which you had 1,000 socially affordable homes that were regenerated, and in the new Elephant Park, there's only going to be 79. So for me, it was a real problematic example of regeneration, and it really spurred me to want to really investigate regeneration and gentrification. And I looked at Brixton because, for me, Brixton iconically has been the kind of space for black intellectual thought in this country. I've viewed it very in the same kind of lens as Harlem in the US. And also going to Harlem and going to Brooklyn in 2014, also kind of seeing the conversations happening there that were very similar to conversations that we were having here about gentrification, also filtered into me wanting to make this film.
Well, it raises the point very cleverly, like we said before, because it's almost like you're making a documentary, but you're also making a film at the same time. So it was a split down the middle between a drama and also actually making a documentary. And was it real people that you featured in the stories, or were they actors speaking real people's stories?
No, it's real people. Wow, okay. The film's a real hybrid in the sense that it's a mixture of fiction, documentary, animation, performance art, and photography, all kind of woven together through the theme of gentrification. So the people we talk to in the documentary sections are real people in Brixton.
Yeah, so a lot of the time you can't tell who's an actor and who's not, and I think that's a real strength of the film.
Cool. Definitely.
Did either of you live in Brixton, or have you ever been
Yeah, I did for a while. I don't anymore.
I live in Elephant Castle. The producer Rinky Atal was born and raised in Brixton.
Okay, so you've got the Brixton connection. Yeah, Weirdly, as well, I'm going out in Brixton tonight. I haven't been there for a while. But it's a friend's birthday. I'm like, where do you want to go? Brixton. So nice. I'm like, weird.
Well, so are we, weirdly.
Oh, really?
It's our release party.
That's not so weird. It's our release party.
But I suppose we couldn't do it anywhere else, could we?
No.
Maybe a movie about Brixton and you do it in, I don't know, South Kensington.
We could have done it, if we did it in Kensington or, I don't know, Shoreditch, that would have been quite ironic.
Hypocritical. and it's a hard one to place, because I think that you raise a lot of really good points, and especially about the point that they make about your character is campaigning about anti-gentrification and saying, well, but you kind of lived in Shoreditch and now you're coming back, and it definitely raised that sort of uncomfortable situation.
Yeah, well, I think as kind of creatives, we are complicit, whether we want to be or not, because, you know, we'll go into an area and take our coffee shops or whatever, make it nice, and then I mean, you explain it much better than I do, but then, so I hear, then the developers kind of, like, go in there, like, oh, this is nice, and...
Yeah.
And we're sort of the unwilling foot soldiers of gentrification, in a way, and we're sort of trying to deal with... Yeah, complicity is the big word that we explore.
That was good.
Thank you.
I think that there is the only positive changes that I could see was when I first moved to Brixton. At first, I'd only ever heard, because I'm born in Lewisham and raised in Lewisham, so I wasn't too far away, but I'd only really gone sort of like the Nunhead border. I hadn't quite gone to Brixton. So when I found out I was going to move there, I thought, oh, maybe it's really quite rough, and even though Lewisham's just as rough. But
I was really thinking about that, because Lewisham.
Yeah,
is
I don't know why I was worrying. But I think I had like an image of what Brixton was like, or maybe I'd had like Brixton riots or, you know, all that stuff. And then I moved there and I found it just so lovely, and the people so lovely, and I never had any problems in Brixton. But I do have a friend who's a police officer who said, well, they've moved the police office, like there's a hub there, and now crime has dropped massively in the whole area because you're 60 seconds away from a police officer, many of them. Mm-hmm. And I did see that happen. Something happened in the street once and there's like 4 cars turned up within 60 seconds. I was like, whoa. So I felt really happy and safe in Brixton. So the positives, I guess, of lots of people moving to the area is that crime rate has gone down massively.
But I guess, I mean, what you're saying there is that all of a sudden there was a heavier police presence, and police were actually doing their job at that. But the thing is, it seems like they were doing that potentially for a new clientele. Why wasn't that always the case to some degree?
Yeah,
why,
okay. Why wasn't that? I can see that.
You understand? I mean, I think there's this... this is a thing that I think Spike Lee was talking about in Brooklyn. It's a similar thing where, okay, now you have all of these, I guess, more affluent members of the community in the space. Now the rubbish is getting cleaned on time. Now all of these extra perk things are happening, things that could have happened before, but why didn't they?
Yeah, it's a hard one to see whether, who came first. Was it, did they decide to set the police station up there because of people moving to the area, or did they set the police up and then people move to the area and go, oh, it's safe now, we can come along? It's a hard one. But I did feel that there was like a reputation that Brixton had that I didn't experience. I found it very, very nice. Mm.
I agree with you on that reputation, but my producer Rinky, and it would have been great if she was here, she will speak to a really strong community. Even in that area, that era, that time people were talking about high crime, her personal experience were very much similar to your experience of feeling very safe and really feeling very solid in her community. Mm. I mean, the thing is, there is this media demonization that goes on, definitely went on on the Haygate estate. Estates become sink estates because the media present them as such.
Yeah.
When, again, that's another space where there was a community there existing before you saw the Haygate estate on Harry Brown, before you saw that Haygate estate on Luther being this kind of cesspit of kind of crime.
Yeah.
There was a community there the whole time, but it's all about how these things are depicted.
I saw that with the Guinness Trust estate, because I was in the sort of the switchover, so there were people who had lived there since the 50s, and there was like little old ladies that you sort of like help them up the stairs and stuff, and yeah, the people who actually lived there and were so sad at being moved out, because I'm assuming that everyone that moved out didn't get to move back in again to the new ones, and a lot of them were saying that they were given options, yeah, like completely out of London, which was seriously unfair. It's like, yeah, I've got a brand new house in, you know, Cornwall. Like, what? The community, the sense of community on the estate, because I hadn't lived on, I'd lived near estates but not in one, and I'm so glad that I got that experience, because the people there were majority lovely. A couple of people, you know, hanging in the stairwell, you're a little bit like, hey, can I get past? But majority of people were just so nice, and there was like, it was like a different level of family that you would get on a street, I would say.
Yeah, with the Guinness Trust, what's interesting is that one of the one of the documentary segments features a lady called Batil Mahari, who was actually on the Guinness Trust, who actually led the campaign to try and maintain her presence in that space, but was unfortunately moved off that and wasn't able to return to Brixton. There's a scene where we follow her into her shop, which is also in Brixton, which is also now on the threat of being shut. And basically she's lost her home in Brixton through the Guinness Trust and what happened there, and now the shop is actually closed, so she's also lost her business in Brixton. And this is a single mother of two, so I think the film, as well as highlighting the kind of arty kind of artist-esque types, Nina characters played by Tanya, is also looking at the people at the front lines of gentrification as well, and is trying to find a cohesive gel between all of it.
Ideally, it'd be great to have like a harmonious, you know, if we could, if maybe that's just a dream, but someone who, all the benefits of some of the new things that are arriving and the benefits of
yeah, this film like really poses the question, you know, who gets to participate in this regeneration, and that's what we want people to really think about.
And if people fancy checking out the movie, how would they go about doing
it? Do it.
Well, the movie opens tonight at the Ritzy in Brixton, and it's also at the Hackney Picture House before opening wider.
Amazing. The following week, yeah.
Amazing. So yeah. People are going to... So you can check out... is there a website? Maybe Ritzy, wouldn't it?
No, just www.amovingimagefilm.com.
Oh, okay. There it is. There was the link. Yeah. And Tanya, how did you get involved in the project? Because you were acting...
Yes, previously. I've been acting for a while now. Well, Sherla and I are actually, like, the best of friends. I keep going around the interview saying, he's my best friend. And I just like look over like, do you like me?
And I just smile.
No, we've been really good friends for about 4 or 5 years. We actually became friends after working together on a short film that he directed a few years ago now. And yeah, we just stayed in touch and always wanted to work together again. So we've been talking about this film for a long, long time. And he did sort of write it with me in mind to play this character. And I think a lot of it is, I don't want to say about me, but no, there's a lot
inspired by.
Because he knows me as a person, I think that he really tried to achieve that sort of seamless effect of, you know, whether you're acting or whether it's real, or, you know, I think a lot of me, he put a lot of me into the script.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Tanya.
That's cool.
The dancing bits.
And oh yeah. And what is next for you two, either together or sort of separately professionally? What are your next projects, next moves?
I'm developing my next feature film with the BFI. It's a personal story. I don't want to talk too much on it, but it looks at the connection between Nigeria and the UK.
Okay, cool.
I'm doing a bit of TV at the moment, but I can't say what.
NDA disclosure. Okay. You could maybe do it. It rhymes with Shmame of Shmoo. Okay, we definitely got to talk about it. Well, thank you guys so much for coming in. Just to recap, it's A Moving Image. If you guys want to go check out the film, it is opening tonight, Ritzy in Brixton. We're all going to be rolling around Brixton tonight.
Oh, yes. I'll be flying around Brixton.
My cape.
Woo!
Brixton Batgirl. It was a very cool, you know, like a documentary slash drama, which was
thank you.
A drama-mentary. No, that doesn't really work.
Oh, God.
No, no. We could do a dramedy, which it'll is a drama-comedy. So I tried and I failed, never mind.
Well,
thank you so much, guys. We've been doing lots of 80s classic movie tunes today for the music, so we're going to go out on Turning Japanese by The Vapors. It's Back Row Into.
Prepared for that whatsoever.
I love that song. I think it's great. I don't, you know, I mean, now would it be acceptable? Is it a bit on the edge of racism? I don't know, but it was in the 80s. It's a vintage record, so you can play it.
Yeah, yeah.
Fine. Welcome, Luti Patterson, to the show. It is a film review time, part of the show where we talk about what we've seen, what we like, what we don't like, and we want you guys to get involved as well. So if there's any movies that you've seen that you think are fantastic, or any movies that you're looking forward to, or anything you've seen is shit, just tweet us at FUBAR Radio.
A lot. No.
Tweet us a lot. We will we'll shout you out. Or email chill@fubarradio.com and let's get a conversation going.
Yeah.
There again is not a lot coming out at the moment.
It's been a bit of a poor effort, really, apart from the obvious.
Apart from Guardians of the Galaxy, which I haven't seen yet because I'm going to see it on Monday. There's not a lot out, so I've been watching a lot of Netflix.
Me too.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
One thing I do want to mention is the Lady Macbeth, because that is coming out tonight.
Ooh.
And earlier in the show, we did an interview with Florence Pugh and the director of Lady Macbeth. And you might, if you're in London, I'm not sure about outside of London, but in London, there is just posters everywhere for this movie.
Actually, I saw them on my way in, quite a lot of them. Yeah,
They've won a massive campaign, which actually, I've got to say, has worked, because I saw the poster and went, oh, I want to...
What is this?
And it is really cool. And at first, again, I thought it was maybe like a Macbeth adaptation. It's not Shakespeare. It is a character. It's a story, standalone story, but it is based on the idea of a woman like Lady Macbeth who is just ruthless for what she wants.
Excellent.
And it's like...
Just what we like.
Love film like
that. It's like some sort of like raunchy kind of Skins... But set in...
It's just ticking all the boxes, isn't it?
Yeah.
tick, tick, tick.
But set in Victorian times, so, which actually I think helps escalate the whole movie, because it's about this young girl who's absolutely gorgeous, got total girl crush on Florence Pugh. And she is like 17 and she has to get married to this a lot older guy who is... he kind of, you know, he bosses her around, he's rude to her, he doesn't sleep with her.
I mean...
Dickhead.
Doesn't give her the D. I mean, what is wrong with that? You know, just give a girl a bit D.
If you're going to marry someone you don't want to marry, then at least, like, just have sex with them.
Just
close
your eyes. Give her a little... And he basically says, I ban you to the house, kind of like husband. And, you know, the feminist in me. Exactly. He's already like, what the F? So, anyway, she ends up coming across the new stable boy, who's a bit of a bad boy.
Oh, what cheeky.
This just sounds like porn.
Pretty much. And they end up having, like, the most lusty affair ever.
This sounds fantastic.
It does, doesn't it?
But then, obviously, the husband finds out, and it's all, you know, and then, just like in the Macbeth, murder starts to happen.
Excellent.
So it's all.
I mean, you've got bloody everything in there, haven't you?
Everything you want and need. Yeah. So Lady Macbeth, I think it's so modern, but just set in the olden days. So I think it'd be a really good, if you're not into your period drama, this would be a brilliant starter.
Like an introduction to it,
And Florence Pugh is just so watchable and headed, I think she's headed to, like, crazy good places.
Brilliant.
So I'm super excited about that.
Yay.
I really, really want to see it.
Yeah, so Lady Macbeth out. So if you can't get into Guardians of the Galaxy tonight, if it is full, go see Lady Macbeth.
Yeah.
And it's a good one, and support, you know, British cinema.
Yes, always do that.
Absolutely.
Just before we forget, because last week we launched a huge competition.
Yeah.
And we're gonna announce the winners. So let me just see who won this week's competition. Oh, it's on the paper, apparently. I just need to read. So we had two competitions. First is a signed copy of Alison Kugel's book, Journaling Fame, A Memoir of a Life Unhinged, and On the Record. And it goes to Dave Simon from Blackpool. So thanks for getting involved.
Whoa! Lovely. Well done, Dave.
Well done, Dave. You have won that copy of that book. And for our prize for Sully, Miracle on the Hudson, we got a big bundle of prizes for that. It was a film, or the film was an untold story of emergency plane landing on the River Hudson.
Tom Hanks, wasn't it?
Yeah. So you could win a DVD, a hoodie, a duffel bag, and the winner, it goes to Michael Anderson on Southend-on-Sea.
Oh, yay, Michael, representing Essex. Well done.
Hometown. Yeah. So well done, Michael. You get that big, huge bundle.
You're so lucky.
I know. Well, we're just giving out prizes.
Can I have it?
Yeah, see, I get so annoyed because I can't have these cool prizes. So unfair.
I know. I see them go through the office and I can't touch them. And we've got another really cool prize. If you are a dog lover, or even if you don't have a dog, you can still win it. We're not going to judge you. A Dog's Purpose, the movie. We've got a Dog's Purpose merchandise to give away. It's a comedy drama based on a novel of the same name about a dog who finds the meaning of his own existence.
Oh, it hasn't looks
that
so
got,
adorable.
Hasn't that got Archie from Riverdale in it?
Yeah, it has actually.
Has it?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I know it's got Dennis Quaid and Josh Gad.
KJ Apa.
Yes.
Not that I have stalked him on the internet at all.
So, for your chance to win a dog treat jar, a dog blanket, dog bowl, a ball launcher, and a bag dispenser.
Oh, I mean, wow, swag.
You're kitted out. Just go to our Twitter account at Foo Bar Radio and retweet our pinned tweet right now. We're going to release the winner next week. Release the winner. We're going to announce the winner. I'm thinking about dogs, aren't we? Release the hounds.
We shall release the winner.
You're free to go now, winner. We do not keep, just to clarify, we do not keep any people overnight at Boomer Radio against their will.
Oh dear.
Major cock up. Yeah. It's all right, it's nearly the end. It's fine. Right, good. That was the competitions. Back to film reviews. So, what else have people been watching if the cinema hasn't been really like getting your buzz in? What else have you been watching on your...
Well, I actually did go to the cinema.
Oh, what did you see?
Last night. I was still there at 2 o'clock this morning.
No!
There was like this fancy pants double bill of Guardians of the Galaxy 1 and 2 in IMAX. It got to 2:30 and I was like, this film needs to end in a minute, please.
Yes. What was it like?
Right.
Oh, dear.
Oh.
The reason I was brought on here is because of my honesty.
Yeah,
and
I like that.
You know, I feel like I'm going to get some sort of backlash for this, but it wasn't as good as I was expecting it to be.
Oh. Mm.
Yeah, now, I will say that it was absolutely amazing. The CGI was brilliant. The characters, obviously, it's lovely to get more of those characters that we all just completely fell in love with.
I didn't, but anyway.
You've just stunned me to silence. You know, their first film is so cool and so funny and, you know, absolutely perfect. I can't pick one single hole in the first film. And I think what didn't help is that because I watched that literally 10 minutes before I watched the second one, I was reminded of how mind-blowing and how beautiful that film is. I just love it. You know, it is one of my favourite, if not my favourite, Marvel film. So when the first one started, I thought, okay, this is good. You know, this is really good. It's funny.
Yeah.
They've ramped up everything. They've taken the humour of the first one, the action of the first one, the relationships between the characters of the first one, and amplified it about 100 times.
Up to 11.
Yeah, exactly. Up to 11. Well done. Good reference. But sometimes it was making me cringe a little bit.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, too much, too much.
I will say that everyone does need to go and see it. Go and see it. You know, I saw it in IMAX and I had a headache at the end of it because it was so, there was so much.
Yeah.
And it was so colourful and amazing. And like I said about the relationships between the characters, they were developed a lot further, you know, and there was a few more people in it. Kurt Russell makes an appearance, which is lovely to see. Tommy Flanagan is there. You know, blink if you're missing, but he's there. I was quite upset about that. But, yeah, I mean, go and see it. Try and see it in IMAX as well to appreciate the art of filmmaking. You know, even the non-CGI cinematography was beautiful. You know, it really, really was. But it just took that step into ridiculous,
right?
Further than a superhero film should go, really, and it was a little bit cheesy at times.
Do you think they were panicking about trying to up, like, a bit
this
of upmanship?
Is the thing.
Yeah.
Like I said, the first one, in my opinion, is so perfect. What were they going to do? They had to. They had no choice but to take it further.
Yeah.
But they took it a little bit too far. But please, I will say this again, don't take me slagging it off as that it's a shit film. It's not. It's an absolutely amazing film.
How is the soundtrack?
I just fell in love with the first one, Johanna. Everyone fell in love with the first one because it was amazing. They couldn't top it. How can you top that?
Yeah.
You know, they did the same thing with, you know, the old 60s, 70s, 80s songs, whatever, on the second mixtape that his mum left him at the end of the first film. But not all of them were instantly recognisable.
Right, okay.
You know, there were a few that I was like, yeah, this is brilliant. You know, I like, literally wanted to dance in the cinema. But the majority of them, I was thinking, oh, you could have picked a much better song for this.
Yeah.
You know.
Apparently the rumours were that the first film, it was an actual mixtape that somebody had made somebody.
I genuinely hope it was.
So they,
I'm really happy for the recipient of that mixtape. Yeah. Because it was amazing.
So whoever made that one, couldn't they, like, sort out, you know. So apparently they literally took it from,
that's amazing,
from a mixtape that somebody had given somebody, and they said this should be all the film's thing.
Yeah.
I don't know how true that is. I want it to be true so badly,
I'm
not going to research it anymore in case it's not right.
But yeah, you know, all the elements are there. James Gunn wrote it again, and I think he just sort of ran away with it and just went a bit too far with certain things, and it was just a little bit cringy sometimes. People might watch it and think, shut up, Lucy, you're talking out your ass. But
yeah,
you know, I it's my job not to watch films like a normal person. I'm there to rip the shit out of it when it needs to be done, you know. But yeah, please go and see
like
it.
That honest best friend everybody needs.
Exactly.
Do I look shit in this?
Yes, you do.
Yes, you do.
Go and get changed.
Awful change of colour makes you look sick. Go away. No, which is brilliant. So, I mean, I'm excited. I'm still going to go and see
yes,
it.
Yes, no, but verdict is go and see it, but just relax and have fun with it.
Yeah.
Don't watch it like an abnormal person that's trying to find fault, you know, and you'll enjoy it.
I wasn't a massive fan of the first one.
I absolutely loved it.
I thought it was a bit boring.
You don't like spacey kind of films?
No, I'm not that kind of person. I don't know. Like, I do like Chris Pratt's in it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I do really like it. Just good. I do really like him, and it was a good film, don't get me wrong, but I just was a bit like,
Wasn't your favourite. I loved that one and Deadpool.
Obviously
were like,
Deadpool.
Were huge surprises for me and the ones that I just keep going back to watch. But there's only so many times you can watch Guardians of the Galaxy on Netflix without wanting to see more. So I'm really excited that there's another one. And I'm glad that it's got lots of excitement and explosions.
It is literally next level action explosion. It's so bright and neon and lovely and like unicorn shit all over it, you know. It's like, that is all I can explain it as. It's just pure joy.
Yeah,
you know.
And Karen Grover, is that what she's called? The girl from Karen Gillian. Yes. There you are. I think Karen Grover's a girl on my Facebook. Sorry, Karen.
Shout out Karen on Facebook.
Shout out Karen Grover on Facebook.
Hey, Karen.
Karen, she's still in it. She's Nebula.
And she's good. Nebula's good.
Yeah. That she develops a lot more. We didn't see a lot of her in the first one.
Good.
And her relationship with Gamora develops as well, which is good to see.
I was about to be like, does it? But I was like, no, they're sisters.
Yes,
wrong.
They are. Sorry,
doesn't develop in that way.
Oops.
Brilliant. Right, well, we're going to just pop to one more song before the end. I've got one from Pretty in Pink. So we're going a bit school disco-y now.
How cute.
Have you seen that film?
Nope.
Oh, Alexa, get out. I do love Pretty in Pink.
Me too.
Which is, if anyone's like, what's Pretty in Pink? It's one of the first John Hughes.
Google him and watch all his films.
Teen movies became teen movies because in the 80s. Because
totally.
Of him. And this film is about a girl, you know, it's like the birth of teen movies. So if you like
basically.
Teen movies, go back and watch all of the John Hughes collection. So this is If You Leave by Pretty in Pink.
James on FUBAR Radio.
We are back after that fantastic...
Such a good choice.
Such a tune.
It was good.
I feel like I'm at an 80s disco and no one's dancing with me. I'm in the corner with my, like...
handmade dress on.
My handmade dress on, like a puffball. Right. Watch the movie, she makes her own prom dress.
I was just laughing and terrible. I didn't know why I was laughing.
Terrible. No, it's brilliant. I used to be into sewing quite a lot, so that film... It inspired me to make my own prom dress. But I never went to prom. I never had a prom.
Yeah, we didn't have proms.
We didn't have proms in flipping England.
I had a prom.
Yeah, but you're from the north. For some reason, you don't do proms in England except if you're in the north and or America.
In Essex, it is a thing now, obviously. Now because, you know. But when I was at senior school, which was like about 30 years ago, probably about 20. But it wasn't a thing then.
Well, talking of age and age-appropriate things, while that song was on, we were just discussing, is it okay to fancy actors who are, like, a lot younger than you?
Right, I'm just going to clarify this. So, what's his name, though?
Tom Holland.
Yeah, oh.
The new Spider-Man.
Can we just, like, confirm his age? Because I'm pretty sure he's 17.
Does anybody clarify
his age for me?
How old's Tom Holland? Does anyone know?
Because
I'm assuming he's a teenager because I know that
He's definitely in... I'm pretty sure he's a teenager.
He must be because he was in The Impossible,
20.
Wasn't he?
He's 20, so he would have been 19.
24, 20. Basically, what we were discussing was, you know, when you go on, you kind of watch a trailer. So I watched the Spider-Man trailer and thought, he's really fit. I'm going to watch interviews with him on YouTube. So I watched one. An hour later, I was 15 interviews in. And then you start watching those fan-made videos, which is the funny moment.
It's so true, though.
And I literally, I do it all the time with people.
Yeah, I do.
I've done it with Nick Robinson.
Oh, I love him. I've done that as well with him.
Nick Robinson, that guy that's going to be in everything, who's got just the sexiest haircut in the world at the minute. I've done it with him. I've done it with Cole Sprouse. I've done it with Dylan Sprouse. I've done it with the bloody Ross Lynch from Austin and Ally on the Disney Channel, which is definitely a teenager.
I think that might be going.
You are going to be one of those cougars.
Yeah.
You're in cougar training right now on YouTube.
I mean, does anybody else watch those? Like, sometimes it's like funny and cute moments.
I do all the time.
Yeah.
Oh, thank God for that.
And like I was saying, I'm 10 years older than you, so, you know, this is what's to come. So.
Ladies, when you get past the point where you're starting to watch those fan-made music videos, then just, you know, the montage music video, then you've got to get out, put the ice cream down.
There is no end.
And back away from the computer right now because
there isn't an end. No, but once, I'll let you into a very dark secret.
Okay, go on.
I'm pretty sure this was about Matt Healy, who's the lead singer of the 1975.
I have a picture of him on my wall. I have a canvas of his face on my wall.
Love of my life also has kissed me before.
What?
No, I'm just joking.
You mean you kissed the poster?
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
I watched, I think it was part 12 I got up to in the funny moments.
Part 12.
Wow, that is...
They were only 4 minutes long.
That doesn't make it any better.
For some reason, film review time has turned into like...
Yeah, I really hope...
Confession time.
I really hope that I didn't know... I don't know why I just said that on the radio because I've met him quite a few times as well.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh. So we're getting all the dark secrets out. Live on air. The best place.
Great.
Well, talking of Guardians of the Galaxy, obviously that's Chris Pratt and we're just also talking about how hot he's become.
God.
Everyone's just hot at the minute.
Maybe they're putting filters. They're putting Snapchat filters on movies now, so everyone just looks beautiful.
They must have done that to Kurt Russell in the film. I'm telling you.
Really?
When you watch it, you'll be like, "How did this happen?"
The makeup Oscar goes to. Well, Jurassic World 2.
Nick Robinson's in that. Sorry, carry on.
He was in the first one. Yeah, I love him so much. Ugh. Watch Kings of Summer. Have you seen Kings of Summer?
I have.
Excellent.
But he's borderline teenager in that one.
I just don't even care.
Definitely 16 in that.
He's not. He's older.
No, he is.
I'm checking.
Wait, was Nick Robinson?
I checked.
Ladies,
was
Nick Robinson?
Joey.
Was he the teenager in Jurassic World?
Yeah.
Right, okay, we are getting quite pervy now, aren't we?
I'm sorry.
I'm going to have to rein this in.
Hang on. Just speak among yourselves. I'm just going to get a picture of him, okay?
1 minute.
Right, so Jurassic World 2.
Yeah.
Apparently, and I really hope this is true.
He's really fit.
Jeff Goldblum is back for the second film.
I heard about that. Let's hope it is true.
Yeah, they're going to do more connections to the original Jurassic Park movie. With the main guy, the main sort of scientist guy, his character is being written in as the co-owner of Richard Attenborough's character.
Brilliant.
So it looked like in the first film it was just owned by Richard Attenborough. No, there was a co-partner who obviously had all the access to all the dinosaur DNA, and so he's now doing something with it, of course. So Sam Neill has been approached, but he said that no, his character is definitely retired and is sick to death of running from dinosaurs.
Shut up, Sam Neill.
So,
sake.
I mean, come on, Sam. You can at least cameo or something or play a dinosaur or something, you know. But Laura... Her name
Dern,
is
Laura Dern.
Laura Dern.
Yeah.
She said that she's not in it, but she would love to be. So I think
get
she's
her
like,
in it then.
I know.
What are you doing?
She's been quoted as saying she's going
to
do it. Like,
then
just
get her
back
it.
In it, you know. But I'm really excited because obviously the Jurassic World movies just made a shit ton of money.
Oh yeah.
And so they're going to be keeping pumping these out, which I'm really
happy
about because I love dinosaurs. So
yeah,
this is brilliant.
Too.
And I'm so excited because I think Jeff Goldblum just kind of stole the first movie
he
made the second one.
Totally.
So this is
welcome
brilliant.
Edition.
I've been scrolling.
Okay.
I can't really find one where he doesn't look really young.
So inappropriate.
Like there, maybe.
Oh,
no.
Yeah.
No, that's not a good
hang
one.
Hang on,
that's definitely not a good one.
Right. I've scrolled through lots of pages. No, that's a good one.
Right,
he's basically he's basically grown his hair out for anyone that cannot see because we're on the radio.
Yes.
And he looks very similar to Brooklyn Beckham, I think.
He does.
Oh, he's another one that we cannot go near.
No.
Ladies. Right.
Let's just stop right there.
That is the end of the show. It turned into a bit of a perv parade. But to end,
I'm so bad.
We've been doing all 80s music all of today, but I'm going to end on something really modern because I'm obsessed with this song right now.
I fancy the lead guy in 13 Reasons Why as well.
Yeah, exactly. So 13
He's definitely 20 something.
For sure. So this is The Night We Met, and it's like the main sort of theme, love theme from 13 Reasons Why. If you haven't seen it, what are you doing? Get on Netflix
and watch it.
Very important.
It's brilliant. And this song, for anyone out there, if anyone is Netflix and chilling right now to this radio show, first of all, but two, I'm going to help you. So we'll see you next week. This is Back Row and Chill.
Bye.
This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. Go to FUBARradio.com for more details.